Religious writer Hannah Moore wrote, "Forgiveness is the economy of the heart. It saves the expense of anger, the cost of hatred, and the waste of spirits." You see, not forgiving makes the cardiovascular system hyperactive. It impairs the quality of sleep. It increases stress hormone production, which leads to depression. People who have a constant attitude of forgiveness are less likely to seek solace in medications or alcohol. And those who are able to forgive when circumstances require it have a slower pulse and fewer physical symptoms. Forgiveness clearly promotes well-being, cardiovascular health, and may even increase survival. And we're here to show you how. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Those who forgive others tend to enjoy a greater sense of psychological well-being than those who are less willing. Harboring a lack of forgiveness is associated with depression and anxiety. One evening, 20-year-old Tariq Kamisa delivered a pizza to a house where four teenage boys were under the influence of drugs and drink, and they planned to rob him. When he refused to give them the pizza, 14-year-old Tony Hicks shot and killed Tariq. I want to share some clips from Martin Doblmeyer's film, The Power of Forgiveness. We start this story with Tariq's dad, Azeem.
At first, I did not believe that this was true. It's very difficult for parents to hear that their children die before they do.
From the onset, I saw that there were victims at both ends of the gun. My son, a victim of his assailant, that assailant a victim of society.
In the courtroom, Tony confessed his guilt before his grandfather and guardian, Ples Felix.
On January 21st, 1995, I shot and killed Tariq Kamisa, a person I didn't even know and who didn't do anything wrong to me.
I pray to God every day that Mr. Kamisa will forgive me for what I've done. And for as long as I live, I'll continue to pray to God to give him strength to deal with his loss. My grandfather promised me that he would be Mr. Kamisa's friend.
From the beginning, Tony was fighting the odds. His mother was 15 when Tony was born. His father abandoned them both. And at age 9, Tony saw his cousin gunned down on the streets of Los Angeles. So Tony's grandfather, Ples Felix, took Tony in to live with him in San Diego. So what Azeem Kamisa did was create the Tariq Kamisa Foundation to stop kids from killing kids.
And he asked me point blank, "Will you help me?" I said, "Of course." That's an answer to my prayer. I will do anything I can to support you and your family. And if this is going to support other kids and not making the tragic choice that my grandson made, then we have a lot of work ahead of us to do.
And Azeem's forgiveness has also impacted more than 8 million school children that he and Ples have had the opportunity to address since then. On today's show, we have a world-renowned expert on forgiveness, a chef in the kitchen, a personal trainer in our gym, and some amazing stories to illustrate the incredible power of forgiveness. But first, the news. In the headlines today, forgiveness helps in chronic disease. Marriage is good for the heart, and a new high for Americans on ADHD drugs. People with a grateful or forgiving disposition have an enhanced quality of life, even in the face of chronic illness. Over 300 people with chronic illness were asked to self-report measures of their tendencies towards gratitude and forgiveness, and whether they tended to be positive or negative in their thinking and attitude. They were then asked about their quality of life in terms of physical health, psychological well-being, and overall satisfaction with life. Gratitude and forgiveness both predicted enhanced quality of life, and the mechanism for this seemed to be a positive attitude to life. In another study, seniors who undertook forgiveness and gratitude training had significantly less anxiety and depression and an increase in life satisfaction and happiness compared with an untrained group. So foster your forgiveness and gratitude. It's never too late. Middle-aged women living with a spouse or partner have a lower risk of dying from ischemic heart disease compared to those who live alone. In a large British study, they found that the risk of having a heart attack was no different for married women, but those having their first heart attack were 28% less likely to die from it. At this stage, it's not known whether this is due to differences in compliance to treatment, the seeking of medical help when it's needed, or simply the social support provided by a spouse. However, this finding is supported by other studies involving both men and women having an acute heart attack. The number of Americans using an ADHD medication rose 36% between 2008 and 2012, with a new total of almost 5 million users. More boys than girls use ADHD drugs because their ADHD is disruptive in nature. Overall, almost 1 in 10 boys are prescribed ADHD medications. Girls' inattention, on the other hand, is not disruptive and so may go undetected. This may explain why the largest increase in use, a whopping 85%, occurred in women aged 26 to 34. Or it may be that the side effect of appetite suppression makes them a potential drug of abuse by this group. Another worrying trend is that antipsychotic prescribing seems to be threefold higher for those treated for ADHD. Surely the starting point for behaviour disorders should be behaviour therapy, not the pharmacy. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Joining us on today's show is Dr. Everett Worthington, a clinical psychologist and director of the psychology program at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. I asked him how he defines forgiveness.
Well, we believe that forgiveness is actually two different things. One of those is to make a decision about how you're going to act or how you would like to act toward the person who's hurt you. But you can make that decision to forgive and to move on and to treat the person as a valued person and still feel very emotionally upset. So that suggests there's a second type of forgiveness that we call emotional forgiveness. And this is replacing negative feelings toward the person with positive feelings toward the person.
That sounds like a real challenge, which we need to talk about later in the show. But tell us, this is a health show. What are the health benefits or the benefits to life in general from actually achieving both that decisional and the emotional forgiveness?
Right. The problems happen when people are not able to forgive. So when we're not able to forgive, it makes us very stressed. And if we harbor a grudge and hold on to that feeling of vengeance or just resentment toward a person, then that can cause three types of problems with our health. It can put us at risk for damage to our heart and our cardiovascular system. It can make our immune system not function very well like it was supposed to. And also it can dump a chemical, a neurochemical, into our system called cortisol. And cortisol, if it is chronically elevated, can have an effect on virtually every system in the body, from shrinking our brain to messing up our digestion to interfering with our heart to our sexual functioning. So not forgiving can have an enormous effect on people. When people forgive and are able to experience more positive feelings toward the other person, those positive feelings broaden their experience and make them, you know, more open to experiencing the positive things that are there in life, and they build their resources so that people can cope with other stressors better.
What about a person's psychosocial function or spiritual function if they harbor unforgiveness? Are those impacted too?
Oh, they are. The relationships can be very affected negatively if we fail to forgive. And so if people feel like you're holding a grudge against them, then they may not be willing to reconcile differences. And so this can affect relationships, which in turn trickles down to other health problems. The spiritual life can also be affected. If people, especially Christians who hold forgiveness as one of the two primary values in all of Christianity, if they are unable to forgive, this can interfere with their spiritual life and their feeling of closeness to God.
Don't go away, because on the other side of the break, Jeremy has a creamy soup that's full of flavor. But first, you're off to see the doctor. I'm sorry, Daniel, but according to your results, you've got NDD.
NDD? Oh, nobody should have NDD. What's NDD?
Nature Deficit Disorder. It's what you get if you don't go outdoors as much as you should.
Oh, come on, doctor. I thought you were going to give me a real diagnosis.
It is a real diagnosis. I know that Richard Louv, journalist and author, coined the phrase, but we know that people who don't get outdoors enough are more likely to have physical, mental, and emotional issues.
Okay, well, let's say that NDD is real. Can't you just give me a drug or a vitamin or a mineral for it?
I'm afraid there's only one cure. You need to go outdoors, walk through the forests, stroll by a stream, sit by a lake, listen to the bird song, just enjoy God's creation.
But doctor, it's dangerous out there. I might get eaten by an animal, or lightning might strike me, or I might get bitten by some bugs.
I doubt it. You're 500 times more likely to die of a heart attack than by the forces of nature.
Oh, so I guess it's good for me to get out in nature, and the exercise and the calming influence of nature will reduce my risk of getting a heart attack?
That's right. That's exactly right. But you know, the air is so fresh outdoors in the woods. It's full of negative ions, which is quite the opposite of indoor air.
But doctor, I like to be inside where it's climate controlled. If I go outside, I might get too cold or I might get too hot. I might even sweat. That would kill me for sure.
I don't think so. Children who don't get outdoors enough are more likely to have attention deficit disorder, ADD, or depression.
ADD on top of NDD? I might get the whole alphabet.
Well, we know people with nature deficit disorder are also more likely to have anxiety and obesity.
So, doctor, what can you do for my NDD disease?
Go out into the woods, sit by a lake, enjoy the bird song and the fresh air and the master designer's handiwork as much as you can. Doctor's orders.
As for me, I call to God and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon I cry out in distress, and He hears my voice.
Welcome to Go Healthy's Kitchen, and today I have a special guest, Jeremy Dixon. He's a chef, and he owns and runs Revive Cafes. Jeremy, what have you got cooking for us today?
Well, each week at Revive, we have a soup of the week, and this is our creamy tomato soup made with cashews.
Creamy soup with cashews, that sounds yummy.
Exactly, it's very delicious. Most cafes will use a whole lot of cream in their soups, but because we don't use cream, we use a cashew cream instead.
Wow, fantastic. So tell us what goes in the soup.
Sure. Well, the first ingredient is 2 tablespoons of oil, 1 large onion chopped, 1 stalk of celery, roughly chopped, 1 small carrot, roughly chopped, 2 cloves of garlic, chopped or crushed, 3 12-ounce cans of tomatoes, 2 cups of hot water, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of honey or date puree, 1/2 teaspoon of mixed herbs, 1 cup of raw cashew nuts, and 1 cup of cold water.
Wow. In a tomato soup, you never expect that many ingredients. Why do you put so many in?
Well, the more ingredients, the more flavour often, so.
Yeah.
But it's very simple.
So what have you got cooking here? Well, I can smell it and hear it sizzling.
Well, for the sake of time, we'll start off with a really yummy base. And this has got celery, onion and carrot. And this is kind of a French cookery way of adding flavour to a dish. And it's called mirepoix, which is just those three ingredients. We've added some garlic and some oil, and we've kind of fried them up, and they're nice and soft and tender.
Right.
Whip up a soup at any moment.
Yeah.
So we're going to add some salt as well. And again, because we're using tomatoes, you generally need to sweeten tomatoes. So we have some honey or date puree or some kind of healthy sweetener. And we have some Italian mixed herbs. Just mix that up and heat it up really fast.
Right. Now, I see you've got some water and cashews here.
That's right. You can make that if you like. So this is the cashew cream.
Equal quantities of water
and cashews,
and that makes a lovely cashew cream. And this becomes as versatile as any dairy cream.
That's right. Exactly. It's a great thing to use.
But you don't have the saturated fats. You've got the polyunsaturated fats in there, and you've still got the creaminess. So
exactly.
That's a really...
And you can use this kind of cream for desserts, for curries, or any other time when you use coconut milk or dairy cream or dairy milk. Just a great, versatile, healthy way of getting some creaminess.
Excellent. So I'm just going to blend that.
Right. Block your ears. And pour it straight in.
Right. Just all in there.
Yep, mixed around. And generally you probably want to keep cooking this for around about 10 or 20 minutes until it's nicely, all the flavours are starting to mingle.
Mm-hmm.
So just plug this in and blend. You've got to watch you don't let it come out of the mixture, else tomato soup goes everywhere.
And you don't have much left in this.
Exactly. There, how simple is that?
That's fantastic. Now, your recipe called for extra boiling water, but to me that looks like a nice thick soup that you probably wouldn't need to.
Exactly. Every soup's different. Sometimes the canned tomatoes come with a lot more water than others, so sometimes you can add water, and often if you use it the next day it has kind of got a little bit more thicker, so sometimes you do need to add a little bit more water, but depends on how you want your soup.
Probably best with this recipe, mix it up first and then as you need to add the extra water.
Exactly. Another tip also, use boiling water. Have a jug of boiling water ready to go, and that way it's a lot quicker to prepare your meals.
Right. Well, that looks excellent. I am dying to taste it.
Yes, let's give it a go.
It's time.
I've garnished it with a bit of extra of the cashew cream on top and some chives, so you can kind of be a bit creative with your garnishes as
well. Yeah, makes it look like a flower.
Let's go.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
You know, I'm not a big fan of tomato soup, but that, I could sit down and eat that whole bowl. No problem.
Exactly. But a wholemeal bread would be fantastic.
And I think I will. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks, Nerida.
Today, we're studying the topic of forgiveness because it has ramifications for our emotional, mental and physical health. Let's start this segment with a story of forgiveness from Sovereign Hope Church.
Friday, May 27th, but they couldn't identify the body because it was so distorted. It was probably about 24 hours later we found out that it was indeed my mom. They called us down to the sheriff's station to tell us. They figured out that my stepdad killed her. Part of me didn't want to believe that my stepdad was capable of doing such an awful thing. I still had a love for him as a father figure in my life. They caught him just over the border of Nevada and arrested him. I think the hardest part was seeing him. For the first time in years, he pled guilty. He got 55 years in prison. I think the sentence hearing was the worst. I was overcome by emotion just because of the sadness of the situation.
A passion of hers, right from the beginning, is that she felt this need to speak to Mick.
I knew with the media being there and how packed the courtroom was that it was a good opportunity to show God's grace in this situation. Regardless of what happened, I forgave him because there was nothing for me to hold on to keep that from him. He's still alive and he still has the chance to ask God to come back into his life and forgive him.
Regardless of what you've done, I still love you. For the person that you your word to my brother and I. God has kept anger off of my heart this whole time and given me an unearthly peace and wrapped me in his love. It's because of him that I forgive you. I don't know how he got to the point of killing my mama, but please know that there's hope and that I pray for you every day. They will find the Lord again and have a relationship with him stronger than you ever knew before.
There's forgiveness. There's still love there. All I could see was the love that I had for my stepdad. It was then that I could put together, you know, what God really did for us on the cross. And that had to been some incredible love to really give up his life for every single one of us.
The decision that you made was wrong, and I know that you have to live with that. But regardless of what everyone in this courtroom says, regardless of what everyone on earth tells you, Jesus died for all of our sins, including yours.
On May 24th, 2011, God opened up a door that was so glorious, and he showed us how to rely on him. He provided peace to us in a way that we can never explain.
Instead of her mother's death becoming a stumbling stone, she's chosen to use it as a stepping stone to peace. If that makes you uncomfortable, then you need to keep watching. As the author of 5 books and numerous articles and research publications on forgiveness, Dr. Worthington has a lot of knowledge to share. I asked him if there are many myths about the nature of forgiveness.
There are. There are a lot of people confuse other things with forgiveness, like there's a saying, forgive and forget. And so people think, well, I ought to forget if I've forgiven. But not true. In fact, forgiveness is actually remembering, but remembering something differently, not remembering all that bitterness and the hate. But forgiveness is also confused with things like forbearing. Forbearing is kind of not expressing negative emotions when I feel them. It's confused with accepting and letting go. So sometimes we will say, life is too short to worry about this. I'm just going to accept this. I'm going to move on with my life. That's very positive. It reduces my unforgiveness, but it's not forgiving. So forgiving is to make that decision to treat the person differently and also to experience a sense of change, feeling or emotion toward the person.
Now, in your books, you talk about the injustice gap and the payback system with forgiveness. Can you explain that for us?
I think that the way that people usually react when they're hurt or offended is that we have a natural sense of justice. I think this is the way that God created us. And so we start our little mental computers going, and we create in our mind a kind of a gap between the way we would like this to be resolved and the way that we see it right now. And so we keep a mental accounting so that if I have a large injustice gap, that's hard to forgive. If I have a smaller injustice gap, that's easy to forgive. What the person does affects the size of that gap. So if a person apologizes to us, then we feel like, oh, that was costly. Some justice is being enacted. If the person says, can I make it up to you? Oh, more justice. And that lowers the injustice gap, making it easier to forgive. But if the person says, I'm not going to, I don't need your forgiveness. You're the one who needs my forgiveness. That increases the injustice gap, makes it very hard for me to forgive things that I think were done to me.
Is it possible to, in that situation, to break that cycle or to still have forgiveness with a large injustice gap?
It is. It is harder to forgive if you have a large injustice gap. But it's possible to forgive even if that gap is a million miles high. So we can forgive, and often that's with God's grace and God's mercy. We can forgive regardless of what the offense was. But it is hard. We just have to admit it's much harder if the person doesn't come some way to meet us.
Do you think by forgiving that we are allowing people to take advantage of us?
Well, I think that can happen, but you know, the way that I defined forgiveness as a decision or a change in my emotion means that forgiveness is something I experience inside my skin. When I start saying something to a person like, I forgive you, we're talking about a different part of the interaction. We're talking about whether we're going to reconcile or not. And that's another thing that people get confused about forgiveness. Forgiveness happens inside my skin. Reconciliation happens between two people. So if I am, you know, just very unconcerned with any justice at all, and I'm just willing to become a doormat, then this people can take advantage of us. But if we, you know, have a sense that, you know, I have a sense of justice, but I am willing to forgive. I'm willing to let this be paid for by something else. I'm willing to absorb the cost here, or I'm willing to let God absorb the cost. Then, you know, we can forgive pretty much anything, and we're not likely to be taken advantage of.
So are you saying that if justice is seen to be done, it makes it easier for us to forgive?
Absolutely. Justice, a lot of people say justice works in opposition to forgiveness, that if you get justice, well, you don't need to forgive. But if you forgive, you can't get any justice. This is not right. Justice works hand in hand with forgiveness. So the more justice that I see being done, the easier it is for me to forgive. If that person who hurt me does something that is very costly and I feel that there's a sense of justice, then that makes me willing to forgive that person much more because I see the justice.
Don't go away, because in the next segment, Dr. Worthington will share his practical 5-step plan on how to extend forgiveness.
Nelson Mandela was in prison from the age of 44 until he was 72. On his release, he says, "As I walked out the door to the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison." He knew that forgiveness brings freedom. We offend others, and they offend us. Some things are small and insignificant. Others are deeply hurtful, even life-changing. But for each and every offense, we need to forgive and to receive forgiveness. As Mandela was an example to South Africans, Jesus is our perfect example. As he was nailed to the cross, he could have condemned those with the hammer. But instead, in love, he asked God to forgive them because he said they didn't understand what they were really doing. And he offers the same to you and me, unconditional forgiveness. All the wrongs that we have ever done, he asks us to hand over to him in confession and repentance. And as far as the east is from the west, that's how far he wants to remove our transgressions from us. The record of our sins may be very dark, filled with guilt and shame. He promises to make us pure as new snow. Do you need forgiveness? Then come to him and receive it. I can promise you'll never be the same.
Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord.
Get your partner and get into the swing. Sean's with us again today. Sean, welcome.
How you doing?
Good. What have you got for us? You got some sandbells, huh?
Some sandbells. We're going to get some frustration out today. Well, not that we're frustrated. We're not frustrated.
No, we're cool, calm, collected.
Cool, calm, collected. But if you were, I'm going to teach you some exercise.
Okay.
All right? All right, we're going to do some just standing in place, and I want you to bring your heel right back there. There you go. Kick in place. Dynamic exercises. Shake out the arm. Remember, if you had a stressful day, this is a great way to just relax the body. All right, and 3, 2, and 1, okay? Feet nice and wide, all right? We're gonna come down, both hands are gonna come to that left side or right side. Come up to the middle, opposite side. Come up, breathe, opposite side. One more side, up, and perfect. All right, come up nice and easy. Shake it out. Now, if you did have a stressful day, I like the sandbell because, let's use the 8. I like the sandbell because it is full of sand and it allows you to do some dynamic exercises, partner exercises. The beauty of it is that you can encourage somebody, okay? So this is great because I'm going to teach you how to slam. You get to slam.
Really?
Yes.
Show us.
I'm going to show you.
How it's done.
All right. Here it is. Weight is here and slamming it down, okay? Using the legs, all right? Using your quads, using your glutes, stand back up, okay?
Okay.
Then your partner grabs it, okay? Puts it up behind their head, nice slam. All the way down, yes. Total body, all right? And it's invigorating, all right?
It is.
Yes, so go ahead. So while you're doing the slam, or I'm doing the slam, I want you to do a squat jump, okay? You're gonna come here and pop up, okay? Then you wait there for me until I'm finished,
all right? All right.
3, 2, and 1. Use those legs. Come on. Nice slam. There you go. You can slam better than that.
I guess my day wasn't stressful enough.
Come on, give me one more. Come on, give me one more. I want to see an impressive slam. Go. Oh, there it is. There it is. I love it. I love it. That is a great
it's
way.
It's what happens when mice get mad.
Oh, mice and men, right?
Sorry, you were saying.
What I was saying is, doesn't it feel good?
Yeah.
It does, right? Just releasing that energy.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the sandbell, all right? So now we're going to turn this to the side and work the obliques. Think of a rainbow is over my head, because there is, all right? And,
This is the one for mice, remember?
And go with the rainbow and slam. Work in that oblique.
Oops.
Okay? Squat down, pick it up. Opposite side. There it is. But try and get it close to your foot without hitting your foot. Go. All right. Pick it up. Go. Come on, give me one more. Go, go. Give me all you got. There you go. Shake it out. Or throw it. So that is a forward slam with your partner. Using your quads, all right, both of you, and a rainbow slam, all right? You had a long day? This is the one for you.
That's slamming good exercise.
All right, feet nice and wide.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is a hamstring stretch. Okay, we use a little bit of the hamstring, a little bit of the quad.
Yes.
I want you to bring your chest to your knee, all right? Hands wrapped around your ankle. 3, 2, 1, come down nice and slow, opposite side. Hold that ankle. Bring your chest to your knee. The further you can bring your chest to your knee, the more you can get a stretch in your hamstring, okay? Come back to the middle, take a nice deep breath, and blow out as you come up. And there you go.
Great
that made me
job.
Work. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
That made me work.
You're glowing. Thank you. That's great.
You're very welcome.
So I hope you don't need to slam every day, but that's a good one if you've had a bad day.
Do you have high blood pressure? A little careful menu planning can help. A 2007 health professional study found that hypertension was almost 25% less likely among people eating at least 4 servings daily of whole grain foods. If you plan oatmeal for breakfast, a whole wheat sandwich for lunch, brown rice with dinner, and snack on popcorn, you've easily enjoyed your 4 servings. Adding whole grains to your menu plan is another ageless advantage.
Garlic has been used as both food and medicine in many cultures for thousands of years, dating back to the time of the pyramids. During both world wars, soldiers were given garlic to prevent gangrene. It's loaded with antioxidants, which helps to destroy free radicals. Free radicals contribute to the aging process, to DNA damage, to heart disease and cancer. Garlic's been used to lower blood pressure, cholesterol, cancer, antibiotics, antivirals, and it's anti-inflammatory. Wow. Its pungent odor is due to the large amount of sulfur it contains. And that double sulfur bond gives it a unique property. It absorbs toxins. So remember to include garlic to your lineup of seasonings and make some garlic bread. Bon appetit.
Yum, that's got my taste buds going. Watch this video, bearing in mind that the offender is America's worst serial killer of over 50 young women. During sentencing, family members of these women were able to address him. Here's what they said.
Gary Ridgway sat there stone-faced as victims' relatives damned him and mocked him.
He's an animal. I wish for him to have a long, suffering, cruel death.
He's gonna go to hell, and that's where he belongs.
But then the emotionless facade finally cracked when the father of one of his victims appeared to surprise him with a dose of human kindness.
Mr. Ridgway, there are people here that hate you. I'm not one of them. You've made it difficult to live up to what I believe, and that is what God says to do, and that's to forgive. You are forgiven, sir.
It's been said that unforgiveness is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Perhaps now you can see why. Dr. Everett Worthington has been counseling people struggling with forgiveness for many years. He has a number of resources on his website, evworthington-forgiveness.com. I asked him to share with us the 5 steps of reaching forgiveness.
We have developed a program that has been used throughout the world, and it is a way that a lot of people have found to be able to work through difficult to forgive events. It requires understanding forgiveness as a decision, as changing your emotion. It requires making that decision that you forgive, but then to get to that really hard to experience part, the emotional forgiveness, we help people move through 5 steps to reach forgiveness. So this is called a reach forgiveness model. So R stands for recall the hurt, but recall it differently. Don't recall what a jerk this person is who hurt me or what a victim I have become because I've been hurt so much, but rather recall in a way that kind of empathizes with the person who hurt me. Now, that's a hard thing to do, to empathize or to kind of feel with this person who hurt me. But we've all hurt other people, and we know that when we hurt this person maybe very deeply, we did not get up that morning and say, oh boy, today I am going to ruin somebody's life. I can hardly wait. We didn't have that feeling at all. We had the feeling that I want to help this person. But when we start trying to help the person, things go very badly, and so execution is bad. So if I can get into the other person's mind and see what were they trying to do, how were they trying to help, but it went wrong, then I can begin to empathize with them, and that replaces those negative emotions of grudge holding, of resentment, of bitterness, with more positive emotions toward the person.
So that
the
E is for empathy.
The E is for empathy, or more broadly, for an emotional replacement, because sometimes love can replace the negative feelings I have, or compassion for the person. So R is recall the hurt, E is empathize with the person who hurt you, and A in the reach is give an altruistic gift of forgiveness, one that the person doesn't deserve, but one that blesses that person who hurt me. Now, it's good to forgive for my own sake. You know, I get benefits out of forgiving, as
Absolutely.
We talked about earlier. I get health benefits. I get mental health benefits. But if I can get to a place where I want to bless that person who hurt me because I'm in a unique position, I got hurt by them, I can give them a gift that somebody else can't give them. That's really going to accelerate your change of emotion. So the C, recall the hurt, empathize, altruistic gift, the C is commit to the forgiveness that you've experienced. So I want to commit by maybe telling someone, or maybe even just writing myself a note that I have forgiven this person. Why do I want to do that? Because of the last step, which is H. It helps me hold on to that forgiveness whenever I doubt that I've forgiven. Now, you might think that if I forgive, that I might just think, oh, I've forgiven, that's never going to change. But in fact, what happens is we often doubt that we've forgiven a person. So let's say I've worked really hard over the weekend. I've gone through these five steps to reach forgiveness, or I've, you know, had a life-changing forgiving experience in church or in interacting with a person. I walk in on Monday and I see that person, I am likely to feel angry and anxious. And the reason is because that is my body doing what God made it to do. And that is, I got hurt with that person in the past, and therefore my body is saying, you better be careful or you get hurt again. I've forgiven them, but this is my body warning me to be careful. So those are the five steps. Recall the hurt, empathize with the person who hurt you, give an altruistic gift of forgiveness, commit to the forgiveness you experience so that you can hold on to that forgiveness if you doubt or when you doubt.
Now, are there particular barriers? What would be the greatest barrier to forgiveness?
Well, one barrier is often the amount of what the other person does. If the other person doesn't seem to be remorseful, if the other person doesn't seem sorry that they've hurt us, if they seem hard toward us, or if they blame us, that creates that great big injustice gap. So that's hard to get past, that big injustice gap. Another thing that makes it hard for us to forgive is sometimes we just get in the habit of having this grudge, and we feel like, I can't get past this. This is something I've been wrestling with for years and years and years, and because I haven't gotten over it in the past, I probably can't get over it now. But with that reach forgiveness model, we found many people who have been able to get rid of grudges that they've held for years and years and years.
After teaching, counselling and researching forgiveness, Dr. Everett Worthington was confronted with murder. Could he forgive? Right after the break, don't miss it. And we're back with a CBS News clip about the amazing story of Mary Johnson and O'Shea Israel.
Thank you, Lord.
In a small apartment building in North Minneapolis, a 59-year-old teacher's aide sings praise to God for no seemingly apparent reason. Indeed, if anyone was to have issues with the Lord, it would be Mary Johnson.
For all you've done for me.
He never had a chance.
In February 1993, Mary's son, Loramian Bird, was shot to death during an argument at a party. He was 20, and Mary's only child.
My son was gone.
The killer was a 16-year-old kid named O'Shea Israel.
I wanted justice. He was an animal. He deserved to be caged.
And he was. Tried as an adult and sentenced to 25 and a half years, O'Shea served 17 before being recently released. He now lives back in the old neighborhood, close to Mary. This close.
He lives next door.
Next door.
How a convicted murderer ended up living a door jam away from his victim's mother is a story not of horrible misfortune, as you might expect, but of remarkable mercy.
A few years ago, Mary asked if she could meet O'Shea here at Minnesota's Stillwater State Prison. As a devout Christian, she felt compelled to see if there was some way, if somehow, she could forgive her son's killer.
What'd she say to you?
I believe the first thing she said was, look, you don't know me, I don't know you, let's just start with right now. And I was befuddled myself.
O'Shea says they met regularly after that. When he got out, she introduced him to her landlord, who, with Mary's blessing, invited O'Shea to move into the building. Today, they don't just live close, they are close. Clearly, Mary was able to forgive.
Unforgiveness is like cancer. It will eat you from the inside out. It's not about that other person. Me forgiving him does not diminish what he's done. Yes, he murdered my son, but the forgiveness is for me. It's for me.
For O'Shea, it hasn't been that easy.
I haven't totally forgiven myself yet. I'm learning how to forgive myself. And I'm still growing towards, you know, trying to forgive myself and what it is I've done.
To that end, O'Shea is now busy proving himself to himself. He works at a recycling plant by day and goes to college by night. He says he's determined to pay back Mary's clemency by contributing to society. In fact, he's already working on it, singing the praises of God and forgiveness at prisons, churches, to large audiences everywhere.
Forgiveness is a powerful thing.
Yes, I'm grateful.
Which explains why Mary can sing her praise of thanks to her audience of one.
Tomorrow we'll delve into those other two aspects of forgiveness, the forgiveness we receive from God, and what O'Shea is struggling to do, forgive yourself. Now back to Dr. Worthington, who after more than a decade of forgiveness work, was called to put it into practice.
Well, my mother was murdered in a very brutal way on a New Year's Eve night. Apparently, she had gone to bed early and the lights were out. And a young man, at least the police think it's a young man, had seen the lights out, thought that he could just waltz in and rob this house because people had probably gone to a New Year's Eve party. And my mom didn't drive, so there was no car in the driveway. So he broke in, and he was in the midst of searching the house. And unfortunately, she woke up, and she came out, must have confronted him. He was holding a crowbar, and he swung it at her and hit her. And then when she fell, he continued to hit her until she had really was mortally injured there. So this young man was upset as a result of what he had done. I think he probably just had thought that he was going to walk in and do a perfect crime, and here he had murdered someone, and he ran from room to room, breaking every mirror in the house because he probably just couldn't look himself in the face.
Mm. What happened to the young man? Was he brought to trial?
There was a young man that was captured, and the police believed him to be guilty. He made a kind of a confession, but he, in the end, recanted that when the evidence was not handled properly, and so he was never brought to trial. So in the eyes of the law, he's innocent, and, you know, we have to treat it as being innocent. I tried to forgive this young man, not to talk with him, that would have been inappropriate, but just to think through the steps of that reach model and try to forgive him. I tried to put myself in his position, what he might be thinking, huddled outside in the cold on a New Year's Eve night, waiting for assurance that there was no one home, seeing it totally dark, and then breaking in, and then getting confronted by this woman. He must have turned around and thought, oh, she's spoiling my perfect crime. He's angry at her. She recognized me. I'm probably going to go to jail. He's afraid. And so he responds with a violence, with hitting her with a crowbar. Now, as I thought through this, I realized that earlier, as I had been dealing with really the emotional impact of this, I remember being in a room with my brother and sister and pointing at a baseball bat in that room and saying, I wish the person who did that were here. I would take that bat and beat him to death. And when I got to that point in the story of thinking through this, of recalling the hurt in a way of empathizing with him, I thought, you know, wait a minute. I flashed back to that pointing at that baseball bat, and I thought, whose heart is darker? You know, is it this young man with the impulse control problem who's robbing people, or is it me, a mature Christian who is willing to time to hit this young man in the head until he died? And I thought, my heart is darker than his heart. But I knew that if I confess this to God, that I could be forgiven of the dark of my heart. And I thought, well, if I can be forgiven for that darkness, who am I to hold this against that young man? And I was able to forgive him.
Now, some would say that you were not honoring your mother by forgiving her murderer. What do you say to that?
Well, for my two siblings, my brother, who was younger than I, and my sister, who was younger than he, we came to the same conclusion within a month of the murder, and all of us independently said that, really, forgiving is what my mother and my father taught us, and we would be dishonoring what they taught us if we didn't forgive. So we felt that we were doing the very thing that honored her memory and her life.
Now, subsequently, you had another challenge, didn't you?
I did. My brother just couldn't get over this, and he wrestled with this for almost 10 years. And about and he, in the end, he took his life. And right before he did that, I was having dinner with him, and he was telling me how he was having flashbacks. And I tried to talk him into getting some help, but he was kind of really had adopted the point of view of my father, who didn't really have much use for psychologists. And so Mike said to me, "I'm not going to any shrink." He says this to his shrink brother, of course, which tells a little bit about our relationships growing up. So anyway, I continued to try to talk him out of it, but he in the end pointed his finger at me and says, I don't want to hear any more about this. And then I responded with the great maturity of, about a 60-year-old by saying, "Whatever." And like an adolescent. And then within a couple of 3 months, he had become so depressed that he killed himself. And so then I had this terrible self-condemnation. Why couldn't I help my own brother? How could I not help him get over this? How could I not help him get to a mental health professional or someone, a pastor or someone that can give him the help that he needed? And that struggle actually for me may have been harder than forgiving the young man who killed mom. So
there's an element of forgiveness that we have to learn to forgive ourselves, which you felt was harder.
I think that sometimes forgiving ourselves can be harder. We can't escape ourselves. I can always escape the other person, even if it's my wife, but I can't escape my own thoughts. I'm there with them all the time. And I am both the one who did wrong and the one who's trying to forgive. So I'm balancing two perspectives, whereas usually, if I've been hurt, I'm just dealing with one perspective. So I think forgiving ourselves can be even harder than forgiving someone else.
The brutal murder of a much-loved mother, nobody brought to justice, then the sad consequence of losing a brother. The injustice gap should have been huge. Yet Dr. Worthington and his sister were able to forgive the murderer, but self-forgiveness for his brother's death came harder. If you're struggling to forgive someone who has wronged you, I hope the stories inspired you to let go of anger, resentment, and hurt. Do yourself the favor. Practice the reach model. Recall the hurt and empathize with the person who hurt you. Look at the hurtful situation from their perspective. Then offer the altruistic gift of forgiveness and commit to forgive by writing it down. Then hold on to that forgiveness so it doesn't slip away. On our next show, we'll look at how to receive forgiveness from God and how to forgive ourselves, which is often harder. Thanks for joining me on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.